Hi. I'm Ty Alford. I am a member of the fellowship, and have been since 96. I'm also an ordained member of the Soda Zen Order of Priests. I want to start by acknowledging my duo partner, Eric LeVay. He did an awesome job, and I'm really lucky that he plays with me. He's also a member here. So this is a poem by Thich Nhat Hanh, Buddhist teacher. It's entitled, The Destitute Child. Precious gems are everywhere in the cosmos, and inside every one of us. I want to offer a handful to you, my dear friend. Yes, this morning, I want to offer a handful to you. A handful of diamonds that glow from morning to evening. Each minute of our daily life is a diamond that contains sky, earth, sunshine, river. We only need to breathe gently for the miracle to be revealed. Birds singing, flowers blooming. Here is the blue sky. Here is the white cloud floating. Your lovely look. Your beautiful smile. All these are contained in one jewel. You who are the richest person on earth. And I would say, I who am the richest person on earth and behave like a destitute child. Let us come back to our heritage. Let us offer each other happiness and learn to dwell in the present moment. Let us cherish life in our two arms and let go of our forgetfulness and despair. So I want to start with a story about Sesshin. Sesshin is the word Sesshin translates into cultivating heart-mind. It's a thing that we do in the Buddhist tradition where we meet and sit all day. Sit and walk and sit and walk and eat a little and chant and sit and walk. And the idea is to cultivate a presence of heart that can be with whatever arises. So I was at a Rahatsu session, and Rahatsu is the time in December, it's usually the first week in December, where we celebrate the Buddha's enlightenment. And some of you may be familiar with this story, but it goes like this. The Buddha sat under a tree, a Bodhi tree, and he sat so still and so long that birds made nests in his hair. And he sat so quietly that spiders spun their webs. And he sat on. But then things rose up inside of him. Someone referred to as Mara, or this great, kind of not such a great person, kind of a meanie, came up and said, you think you're so strong. Here we go. Here's some temptation for you. Here's some other temptation for you. We got beautiful women. We got, you're going to be so powerful. And he sat still. And he didn't move. He was immovable. And Mara was like, I know what will get you. So Mara said, who are you? Who are you to think that you can be enlightened? Well, the Buddha started to doubt himself. But then he reached out. Have you seen a statue of Buddha reaching down and touching the ground? This is what it symbolizes. He reached down and he touched the ground. He touched the earth and he called on the earth as his witness. And he said, I call on the earth as my witness that I am worthy. And the earth rose up and said, he is. He is worthy of enlightenment, just as we all are. So this is these are the stories that I was sitting with in my Rahatsu session. I don't remember exactly what part of the session it was, but a little background on this too is that this was the first session that I had an official duty, and my official duty was Jisha, which is sort of the attendant to the priest. And it's not that big a deal if you've done it for a while, but when you first, it's really overwhelming at first. And I was not feeling too adequate. And then to boot, the teacher for this session was my teacher's teacher, who was a dead ringer for my mom. So I'm feeling inadequate, and my mom came to visit. So we're sitting. You must have had a similar relationship with your mom. So I'm sitting, Sashin, on my cushion, you know, trying to be very upright and quiet. And my teacher's teacher walks up, and the room is quiet and dark, kind of. And the light is starting to just be different in the air. So I know she's sitting right beside me. So I hear her walk up. You know, if you're a priest, you know, you're running the show, you can come in whenever you want. Anyway, so she came in. And so I began to be kind of, all kinds of, any kind of negative thing I could think about this person was popping up into my imagination. And that happened, and I felt it, and I was like, no. I want to choose love. And so, with these stories of enlightenment, I called on the earth. I said, I call on my angels. I even called on Jesus. All my guides and helpers, everything good, I call on everything good to help me choose love and not hatred. So in that moment, I had images of myself as a child. I had images of my mother. And when I was a child, I had images of old bad hurts. And I kept calling on this love. And I felt in that moment a shift. And I felt in that moment light surround me and enfold me in warmth and caring. And I felt since that time such a profound healing in my life and such a profound shift in my awareness of myself and my parents and pretty much the world. This is why I do these practices. So I still pray. I wouldn't call, it's not like I think that Grandpa in the sky is going to answer me. But I pray, just as C.S. Lewis, the great Christian apologist, said, I pray because praying doesn't change God, but praying changes me. And sometimes I'll say prayers like, there's this one that I learned when I was at the monastery in Iowa. And at night before you go to sleep, I would say, I'm trying to remember. I vow with all beings to calm all things. So it's not exactly putting an intention out there, but it's a recognition that I am connected with everything all the time. And that there is this way of being with everything that I want to somehow connect with. Another, I think the thing I'll leave you with is this idea that when I'm speaking, I'm praying. And when I'm listening, I'm meditating. So I wrote this song after reading Thich Nhat Hanh's book, Reconciliation, from which the poem came. I highly recommend the book. And he has this idea that we can heal not only our own pain, but the pain of our ancestors. That our parents, our loved ones, even back in time, present in our own bodies. It's called Only Love. Reach out my hand to touch you. Beyond space and time, I reach out to show you more than only words. I reach out to hold you in my heart again. Only love is here. Compassion, only love can hold the pain, boundless wisdom, only love can heal the fear. Cry as much as you need to, cry as much as you need to, till you can feel the sun. Irises pop their heads up in the springtime snow. Breathe in the beauty and feel. Deep compassion, only love can hold the pain, boundless wisdom, only love can heal the fear. Healing the pain of my parents, close again, sending love back to the Buddha, wisdom beyond wisdom, we begin again. Needs a love, feel all the beauty, be with the pain, heal the same hurt that from our ancestors came. Only love is here. Compassion. Dr. James H. Cone, a central figure in Black Christian liberation theology in the 1960s and on, died this past week. In reading about his legacy, including an excellent New York Times obituary for anyone who's interested, I highly recommend it. I was struck by how important his work is for those of us on any kind of healing path. Do not believe any thought that dehumanizes you, he wrote. It's a simple litmus test for what kinds of ideas about God and religion deserve our respect and faithfulness.
highest standard that we all deserve our own humanity is particularly relevant to the topic that was proposed at that annual question service about how to heal spiritual wounds from past religious trauma. My understanding of life is that no matter the source, there is bound to be some kind of pain along the journey. Hopefully, regardless of the kind of hurt you've encountered, you have also been able to access the message that anything that dehumanizes you is wrong. Everyone deserves to know and believe this, including those among us who have been targeted by religious unkindness and bigotry. When I talk about spiritual wounds, I mean those inflicted by religious ideas, spiritual leaders, congregational cultures, and theological institutions that seek to dehumanize us for whatever reason. The Reverend Carol Howard Merritt is a progressive, socially engaged Presbyterian minister who grew up in right-wing evangelical Christianity and an abusive family. She criticizes conservative and orthodox Christianity and its values for inflicting great pain and harm. She holds the patriarchal theology of her upbringing responsible for much of the violence she experienced at the hands of her father. Because not only did he mistreat his family, they all believed that God sanctified the abuse. Instead of offering refuge, religion can betray people's bodies, hearts, and souls. Merritt calls these spiritual wounds lacerations that range in acuteness. She writes, "A man revealed a paper cut when he told me about being scolded by a haughty elder, lecturing him on his shabby shoes. He knew his parents couldn't afford dress shoes, and so to protect their dignity and his own, he refused to attend church. Other times, a scar lingered after a woman felt subhuman in her religious community. She chafed with teachings of obedience and submission in the very place where her full humanity should have been celebrated. Still in other moments," Merritt continues, "I witnessed deep gouges inflicted by a manipulative man in his collar seducing a young boy into his forbidden bed. I watched how the abuse did not affect just the boy, but it rippled to his family, friends, and community." Some of us here in this room now have suffered similarly, and in other ways entirely. It is staggering what people endure in the name of God. The damage done by Christianity, as opposed to other faith traditions, none of which are blameless, is especially widespread in this country because Christianity is the U.S. religion with the most cultural, institutional, financial, and political power. For healing to ever be possible, we must name and reckon with the severity of the trauma. Only from facing the reality of the hurt can healing happen. There are many and different ways to gather the courage and resources to face pain. One step is to believe yourself that the hurt is real and that it matters. Trauma shouldn't be ignored, minimized, or silenced. It needs witness. As author Cheryl Richardson says, people start to heal the moment they feel heard. In order to seek greater health and well-being, you're going to need to set firm boundaries with or even leave the community, family, or institution that is causing or furthering harm. Other helpful options can be therapy, spiritual direction, or pastoral care. None of this is exactly linear. That's not how healing works. But at some point, as or after you've recognized the harm, comes a big, slippery question. What does healing look like? Let's start with what it's not. It doesn't mean turning back time and making something that happened not have happened. Nothing can do that. Recovery does not render us totally different. We have to give up the fantasy of becoming some kind of pure, sparkling, unblemished version of ourselves. If that sounds harsh or discouraging, let me temper that unwelcome news with the beautiful part. Healing can mean feeling at home within yourself. That can truly be transformative. There's a baby sermon happening. I like that. My friend, the Reverend Mitra Ranama, who preached here some years back, describes healing as integration. Integration means being honest that your past really happened to you. You're not denying your experience and its pain. It means accepting that you've been shaped by what you've lived through. That might be sad or hard sometimes, but integration means that those challenging memories and moments are not the sum total of who you are. They are true, but so are the happy, healthy, and growing parts of your life. Healing means that the past doesn't overwhelm today or tomorrow. Your history is no longer the primary driver of your present and future. You, a fully integrated and recovering you, not someone drowning in trauma and despair, get to navigate. You're still steering the vehicle of your own life. If that sounds subjective, well, it is. Healing is going to show up differently in different people's lives. There's no best way to do it. But there are concrete tools we can use. Merritt, the minister I talked about earlier, wrote a book called Healing Spiritual Wounds, Reconnecting with a Loving God After Experiencing a Hurtful Church, that contains practical suggestions. It's written for an audience different than a Unitarian Universalist congregation, more for folks who come from conservative and or abusive Christian traditions and who are trying to make a happy home within a more expansive, joyful, and affirming Christianity. However, if you don't mind doing some translation, it's a quick and accessible read, and I'd be happy to lend you my copy if you see me after the service. I'd like to share one of the practices she discovered was helpful in her own recovery process, and now recommends to those working through their own religious trauma and wounding. It's a word and a concept that might well prompt a squirm when I say it. It's prayer. We are shy about addressing this subject in Unitarian Universalism, and I know that some among us would rather not talk or listen about prayer. Some of you might be confused about what I actually mean when I say prayer. You might be annoyed because you appreciate that the fellowship doesn't require you to have a personal relationship with prayer, and you'd rather not get into it. Maybe you are atheist or agnostic, and the way you understand this identity means that you don't pray. You might be squirming because praying or being prayed for has been deeply toxic to you or those you love. Let me be crystal clear. I have no vested interest in demanding or even slyly coaxing you to pray if you do not wish to do so. Prayer isn't a determining factor in whether you're a spiritual or ethical person, as far as I'm concerned. If it's not your cup of tea, I believe that. I accept it. As a personal example, neither my father nor sister have the slightest idea what prayer means, or the least interest in contemplating its definition, or having anything to do with organized religion at all, and they are among the best people I could ever hope to know. Yet I have noticed that those who respond to religious concepts with the most angry vehemence and defensive rejection are often, probably not always, but often, battling secret pain and fear of rejection, of persecution, of being triggered. If you have a huge reaction to the idea that prayer can be a useful tool for those who are interested, then I wonder if perhaps you have been wounded spiritually. If that's ringing any bells with you, I suggest first and foremost that you offer yourself compassion for feeling jangled. This stuff is hard. Don't feel undue pressure to embrace prayer. But if you can barely stand to hear the word, there's likely a wound there. If this talk about prayer causes you to squirm, see if you can stick with it. If you can't, if it would actively harm you to stay with it, listen to that right away. Congratulations for knowing that this is not the time for you to approach prayer. The time may never be ripe, or it may someday shift within you. For now, just tune out for a second. Take a breath and think about the light through the stained glass window, or something that you're looking forward to in life. If you feel interest in prayer, a sense of wondering about it, or only a little tiny squirm, just discomfort, not acute pain, then let's treat that with curiosity. Check in with yourself. Does prayer trigger you? Is there trauma there? It's genuinely okay if the answer is yes or no. If yes, could you consider some healing or growing around prayer? If not, give yourself more time with as much patience and generosity as you can muster. Maybe you need another day or decade. For those of you who answer yes, you'd like to dive into the possibility of prayer. You're ready to work on integration. There might always be some part of you that recalls past wounding in relationship to praying, and yet you might also reach a place of being able to separate that from the spiritual community where you are now and the spiritual practices that might hold meaning to you. Now, maybe your reaction to my bringing up prayer was, yes, let's pray. We've talked about it, and now I'd like to invite you to actually pray with me. To prepare, you might wish to take a deep centering breath, maybe plant your feet firmly on the floor. Some people close their eyes, clasp their hands together, open their palms up to the sky, or reach out for a loved one sitting near. However you feel called to get ready. Here we go. Spirit of life, dear God, you who are known by so many names and yet are ultimately unnameable, open my sight so that I can find love's face in everyone I encounter, myself included. Open my senses so I can feel your voice in whatever forms it takes. Open my spirit so I can freely share whatever is mine to give. Open my heart so I can live more fully in relationship to love. Open my life so I can pray without ceasing, so I can practice paying attention to what is worthy of gratitude and what needs our work. May it be so. Amen. If this praying practice doesn't work for you, that's okay. Really. Prayer or anything religious doesn't have to be meaningful or helpful for you to be a whole person. But if this simple prayer felt good, or if it holds promise for spiritual wounds that need attention, there are a few copies of this prayer on the small table with the orders of service right outside the sanctuary doors. And I can post it on our fellowship's Facebook page too. Try it out if you'd like. Maybe daily for a week or two. And then assess. Does it feel like good medicine? What else do you need on your path of spiritual growth and healing? Any practice can bring up other baggage, including unexpected triggers. Diving into an old hurt is how we heal, yet it's also a process guaranteed to lead to other memories, shifts, and realizations. As we recognize our wounds, we are better able to integrate our histories into a present and future where we are healed. We all deserve healing. We all deserve freedom from any spiritual or religious thought, idea, person, or attempt to dehumanize us. May it be so. Amen.